actually, John. You may be right. I am right. Also, James Hawkins, Air Force General and member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was here too, right? Right. Who else? Oh, about a dozen other men. None of them important to the business at hand. Except Scott Lansdale. He's the CIA liaison to the White House. He added, "That's secret information, so it can't leave this room." Okay. I didn't have that name, but I'd be disappointed if there wasn't a CIA guy involved in... whatever. I said, "Your secret's safe with us, Bain." Maddox explained to Kate and me, "Those four men make up my executive board." "What executive board?" "Of this club." "Right. So what did you guys talk about?" I asked. "Project Green and Wildfire." "Right. So how's that going?" "Fine." He looked at his watch, so I looked at mine. It was 7:33, and hopefully Walsh was getting around to reading his personal email. Hopefully, too, the state troopers would be arriving soon. But I wasn't counting on that. Maddox said, "Well, now I have some questions for you. Are you alone tonight?" I did a good imitation of a laugh. "Sure." "Well," he said, "it doesn't matter at this point." I didn't want to hear that. He asked, "How did you figure this out?" I was happy to reply, "Harry Muller." He wrote us a note on the lining of his pants pocket. "Oh. Well, that was smart." I said to him, "Fuck you." He completely ignored that and asked me, "Have you ever heard of Wildfire?" He gave me a hint. "Highly sensitive government protocol. To be honest with you, Bain, I don't read all my memos from Washington." I glanced at Kate, who was standing with her back to the fireplace, her hand in her gun pocket, and asked her, "Kate, you ever hear a Wildfire?"
"No."
I turned back to Maddox, shrugged, and said, "I guess we missed that memo. What did it say?" He seemed impatient with me and responded, "It wouldn't be in a memo, John. I think you have most of what you need, so don't be intellectually lazy and expect me to put it all together for you." I said to Kate, "He's calling us lazy, after all the work we've done." Maddox admitted to both of us, "Actually, you seem to have solved the homicide case, and you're closer to the other thing than I'd thought, but you need to put it together." "Okay." I went to the French doors and opened them. It was a nice night, and a bright half-moon was almost directly overhead, lighting up the clearing behind the lodge. Off in the distance, I could see the metal roof of the generator building and the three chimneys belching smoke into the air. Also, there were two all-terrain vehicles and a black jeep prowling around back there, as though they were guarding the building. I said to Maddox, "I see the diesel engines are running." "That's right. I just had them serviced." I turned from the double doors and walked back to where Maddox was still leaning against the bar. 6,000 kilowatts.
"Right.
Who told you that? Potsdam Diesel?" I didn't answer his question. "Where's the ELF transmitter?" He didn't seem surprised and replied, "I'm not overly impressed that you figured out this was an ELF station. It's all there for anyone to see. The generators, the cables, the location here in the Adirondacks. Where's the transmitter, Bain?" "I'll show it to you. Later." I said to him, "Now would be a really good time." He ignored that and we eyeballed each other. He didn't look like a man with a serious problem. He asked me, So have you come to any startling conclusions? He turned to Kate.
Kate? A eureka moment?
Kate said to him, 4 suitcase nuclear weapons were flown on your 2 aircraft to L.A. and San Francisco.
Correct. And?
She continued, and your ELF transmitter will send a signal to detonate those devices when they reach their final destinations.
Well, close.
I was getting a little tired of this bullshit, so I said to Maddox, the game's over, pal. I'm placing you under arrest for the murder of Federal Agent Harry Mueller. Turn around, put your hands on the bar and spread your legs. I said, Kate, cover me. I stepped toward Maddox, who wasn't doing what I told him to do. I heard Kate say, John. I glanced back and saw Carl at the door with a raised shotgun directed at Kate. Across the room, another man stood at the open doors of the game room with an M16 rifle raised and pointed. A third man walked in through the doors from the terrace, aiming an M16 at me. As they both moved closer into the room, I saw that the guy who'd come from the game room was Luther, and the guy from the terrace was the guard at the gatehouse, whom I'd blasted with my air horn. I glanced back at Maddox and saw he was holding a big Army Colt 45 automatic, pointed at my face. Well, I couldn't say I hadn't seen this coming, but it still seemed unreal. Then Maddox said to us, "You knew you weren't getting out of here alive." Chapter 49. Kate and I made eye contact, and she didn't look frightened. She looked pissed off about something. Maybe me. Maddox said, "All right, both of you, face down on the floor." He added, in case we didn't know, "One false move and you're both dead." He further added, "No kidding." So we got face down on the floor, which was the correct police and military procedure for disarming prisoners. Obviously, we were dealing with people who knew how this was done. I heard Maddox say, "Kate, you first. Weapons. Slowly. John, keep your face in the carpet and don't even breathe." I couldn't see what was going on, but I heard what I thought was the sound of a boot or shoe kicking Kate's Glock across the carpet, and Maddox said to her, "Do you always carry your gun in your pocket?" She didn't reply, and Maddox continued, "A lot of good it did you." Then he asked her, "Any more weapons?"
"No."
"Where's your holster?"
"Small of my back."
He ordered, "Take her holster and take off her watch, her shoes, socks, and jacket, then wand her." I heard the sounds of these items being removed and tossed aside. Then Maddox said, "Frisk her." Next, I heard Kate say, "Get your fucking hands off me." Maddox retorted, "Do you want a strip search or a frisk and wanding?" No reply. Then Luther's voice said, "Clean." Maddox ordered, "Turn over." I heard her turn over, then a few seconds later, the wand made a hit, and Carl asked, "What's that?" Kate replied, "My fucking belt and zipper. What's it look like?" Maddox said, "Take your belt off." I didn't know if they wanded her again, but I didn't hear a buzz, so the bear banger hadn't been detected. Maddox instructed, "Carl, pat her down." I couldn't see where he patted her, but she said to Carl, "Having fun?" A few seconds later, Carl said, "Clean." I didn't know where that bear banger was on Kate's body, but either it had escaped detection or they had it and didn't know what they had. Maddox said to the other security guy, "Derek, put the shackles on her." I heard metallic sounds as the shackles were clamped and locked. Then Maddox said, "Your turn, John. You know the drill. Gun first." Still lying face down, I brought my hand under my chest as though reaching for my gun, and I pulled the bear banger out of my shirt pocket, then laid it on the carpet under my stomach. Maddox had apparently moved behind me near my feet. "Don't even think about being a hero, or your wife is dead." He added, "Yes, I know she's your wife." "Fuck you." I pulled my Glock from my belt and slid it across the carpet. "What else?" "No lie, John, or I put a 45 slug in your ass." "Ankle holster. Left side." Someone pulled up my pants leg and took my holster and 38 revolver. Then two guys pulled off my shoes and socks and my leather jacket and watch. Maddox said, "Wand him." One guy, I think Luther, walked around me with the wand, but nothing set it off. Maddox continued, "Frisk him." Someone patted down my legs, took my wallet, then patted down my back. Luther reported, "Clean." I said, "Bane, Luther was squeezing my ass." Luther wasn't amused and said, "Shut your fucking mouth, sir. You're supposed to pat, not squeeze." I felt a heavy boot smashing into my right rib cage as Luther shouted, "Asshole." Maddox warned Luther, "Don't ever do that without my permission." After I caught my breath, I couldn't resist pointing out, "Not that well-disciplined, Bane." Maddox said, "Shut up." He informed me, "I really don't like your sarcasm." He snapped, "Roll over." I needed to roll over without exposing the bear banger on the carpet under my stomach. So instead of doing a simple sideways roll, I made a pretense of being in pain from the kick in the ribs and did a passable imitation of a beached whale flopping around so that I wound up in the same place on the carpet with the bear banger under my back. I could see Maddox now, standing near my feet, and Carl standing near Kate, pointing the shotgun at her. Luther was off to my right side, holding the wand, which he was slapping into his hand as though it were a billy club that he was thinking about swinging at my head. The other security guy, Derek, was someplace I couldn't see from where I was lying, but I figured he'd repositioned himself behind my head with his M16 pointing down at me. The only good news here was that Maddox, for some reason, hadn't just opened fire. He seemed to sense what I was thinking and said to me, "If you're wondering why I'm taking all this time and trouble with you two, the answer is I need some information from you. Also, I don't want blood on this Persian carpet." Both those reasons sounded good. Maddox instructed, "Take off your belt." I unbuckled it, pulled it through the loops, and tossed it aside. He said to Derek, "Shackle him." And Derek ordered, "Raise your legs." I raised my legs, and Derek slapped the ankle bracelets on and locked them in place. I was surprised how heavy they were, and I dropped my legs, causing the shackles to rattle. Luther pulled the pen out of my shirt pocket, then passed the wand over me. My zipper also set it off, so Luther stuck the wand down my pants and said, "No brass balls, Colonel." Everyone got a little chuckle out of that, except me and Kate. It occurred to me that I'd pissed off everyone in this room, maybe including Kate, and that though they'd been mostly professional so far, it could get very personal very quickly. So I thought, for my wife's sake, I should try to keep my mouth shut. I looked over at Kate, who was lying about 10 feet from me, also on her back, and also wearing shackles. We made eye contact, and I said to her, "It's gonna be okay when they get here."
"I know."
Of course, it wasn't a matter of when, but a matter of if. Maddox barked, "Shut up! Speak only when spoken to." He said to Luther, "Frisk him again." Luther did a rough frisk, going so far as to stick his thumb in my testicles, then said, "Clean." Maddox moved to the bar and started going through our jackets, credentials, shoes, and belts, Then he dumped the contents of Kate's handbag on the bar and rummaged through the items. He said to us, I count 6 fully loaded magazines.
Did you think you were going to have a firefight?
The other 3 idiots laughed. I couldn't resist saying, fuck you. Maddox informed me, that's what your friend Harry kept saying. Fuck you, fuck you.
Do you have anything intelligent to say?
Yeah, you're still under arrest. He thought that was funny and said, so are you. Maddox was still going through our things on the bar, and I saw him take the batteries out of our cell phones, then examine my pen. He still hadn't found Kate's bear banger, so I hoped she still had it. Maddox said, well, here's Detective Muller's credential case.
John, why do you have that?
To give it to his family.
I see. And who's going to give your badge to your family after you're dead?
Is that a rhetorical question?
You wish it was.
He had our notebooks now, and I knew he couldn't read my notes because no one, myself included, can read my handwriting. But he said to Kate, whose handwriting is very neat, I see you have a logical mind. Rare for a woman. She replied, of course, fuck you. He ignored that as he flipped through her notebook.
Kate, does anyone know you're here?
Just the FBI and the state police, who are on their way.
If there was anything like that happening at state police headquarters, I'd know about it. That was not what we wanted to hear. He asked me, John, what do they know at 26 Fed?
Everything.
I don't think so.
Then don't ask.
You were seen speaking to Harry Friday afternoon as you both got on the elevator at 26 Fed.
What did you speak about?
I really didn't want to hear that Bane Maddox had a source inside 26 Federal Plaza.
John?
We didn't talk business.
All right.
I'm a little pressed for time, John, so we can continue this later.
Later is good.
But I'm not going to be so nice later.
You're not so nice now, Bane.
He laughed and said, you ain't seen nothing yet, pal.
I advised him, go fuck yourself.
He was standing directly over me now, with those hawk eyes staring down at me like he was in flight and he'd spotted an injured animal on the ground. He said to me, there are 2 kinds of interrogations. I don't know about you, John, but I actually prefer the kind without blood and broken bones and screams for mercy. He turned from me and said, Kate? How about you? She didn't reply. He continued on that subject. Also, there are 2 ways to go through the wood chipper, dead or alive. He informed us, Putyoff went through dead because that was just a killing of convenience. But you 2 piss me off. However, if you cooperate, I'll give you my word of honor that you'll have a quick, merciful death by a gunshot to the head before you go through the wood chipper and become bear food. Okay? Deal?
John? Kate?
I couldn't quite see what was in that deal for me, but to buy a little time, I said, deal.
Good.
Maddox said, all right. You asked to see my ELF transmitter, so I'll show it to you. Actually, I said, I'll just take those lists of your house guests and staff, and we'll be on our way.
John, this is not funny.
It was Maddox speaking, but it could just as well have been Kate. I could see and hear all 4 men moving around the room. Then Maddox said, okay, Mr. and Mrs. Corey, you can stand now. Hands on your heads. I began to sit up and grimaced from the pain in my ribs, which was not imaginary anymore. I put my hand behind my back to push up, palmed the bear banger and stuck it in the back of my tighty-whities, then got to my feet.
So far, so good. I turned toward Kate, who was standing and looking at me. I said to her, "You're gonna have to bear up later." She nodded. Maddox reminded me, "Shut up." He glanced at his watch, then said to Carl, "Let's move out." Carl ordered, "Follow me." 10-foot intervals. Carl headed toward the open doors of the card room, and Maddox said to us, "Move. Hands on your heads." We followed Carl. I have never walked in shackles, and even though there was some slack in the chain, it wasn't easy to put one foot in front of the other, and I found myself shuffling like the men on the chain gang. Plus, the metal was already chafing my bare ankles. Also, my beltless pants were dropping, and I had to hitch them up a few times, which caused Luther to shout, "Hands on your head!" I could see that Kate, ahead of me, was having a lot of difficulty walking, and she almost stumbled. But her tight jeans held up, and she kept her hands on her head. I didn't know who I was following, so I glanced over my shoulder and saw Maddox about 10 feet behind me, his Colt 45 in his hand, swinging at his side. Luther was bringing up the rear with his M16 rifle at the ready. Derek, the air horn victim, had stayed back in the bar, and he was collecting everything that was taken from us. Maddox said to me, "The next time you turn around, you'll be sprouting a third eye in the middle of your forehead. Understand?" I think I understood what he was saying. So, as it turned out, Mr. Bane Maddox was not so charming, well-mannered, or even civilized. Goes to show you. Actually, I think I liked him better this way. Gloves off. All pretenses dropped. And, more important, he was taking us to the ELF transmitter. Carl halted in the middle of the card room, and Maddox said, "Stop." Kate and I did as we were told, and I looked around. On one wall was a big dartboard whose target was a full-color photo of Saddam Hussein's face. Maddox reminded me, "You asked when the war was going to start. Well, the operational date is March 15th, the Ides of March, give or take a day or two for glitches. But I'm starting it early, in less than an hour. Are we getting dinner first?" Luther, at least, thought that was funny. Maddox, who was ahead of me now, seemed a little tense, or maybe preoccupied, and didn't reply to my question. Anyway, Carl had slung his shotgun over his shoulder, and I got a good look at it. It was a Browning automatic shotgun, probably 12-gauge, and it would fire 5 rounds as quickly as you could pull the trigger and stay on your feet. For Carl, that would be no problem. Maddox's Colt 45 automatic held 7 rounds in the clip and 1 in the chamber. The gun was notoriously inaccurate, but if a blunt-nosed 45 slug hit you any place, you'd go airborne. And as my ex-military buddies like to say, it's the fall that kills you. Luther's M16 was another animal altogether. Very accurate at medium distances, and if Luther was carrying the fully automatic version, it could spray 20 steel-jacketed rounds at you in less time than it took to say, "Holy shit, I'm dead." In any case, we'd lost Derek, the air horn guy, who probably had an appointment with an ear doctor. And now Kate and I had to contend with only 3 guys. But they weren't your normal run-of-the-mill street scum. Like my Hispanic friends who sort of closed their eyes when they fired at me, or the Mideastern gentleman who, I honestly believe, can't be trying to hit anyone when they fire their AK-47s. Anyway, not only were these 3 guys paramilitary, but Kate and I were shackled, beltless, barefoot, and in a tight spot. Bottom line, this was not the time to go bear banger, and I hoped Kate understood that. Also, we needed to get to the ELF transmitter. I noticed that Carl was reaching under the big round card table. Then he stepped back. As I watched,
The table began to lift, and I could hear the humming of an electric motor as the table continued to rise along with the round rug beneath it and the circular section of the floor beneath the rug. I could see now the hydraulic piston that was lifting everything, and when the table legs, rug, and floor section were about 5 feet from floor level, it stopped, leaving a hole in the floor about 4 feet in diameter. Carl sat on the floor with his legs dangling into the hole, then disappeared. Soon, a light came out of the dark space. Maddox said, "Kate, you first." She hesitated, and he moved quickly toward her, grabbed her arm, and propelled her forward toward the opening in the floor. She almost fell because of the shackles, and I said to Maddox, "Take it easy, asshole." He looked at me and said, "One more word out of you, and she will be sorry. Understand?" I nodded. Maddox held Kate's arm and maneuvered her to the edge of the opening, saying, "It's a spiral staircase. Hold the rails and move quickly." Kate sat on the floor and grabbed a rope handle hanging from the underside of the elevated floor, then descended into the hall. Maddox motioned me toward the opening. "Let's go." I felt Luther give me a shove, and I realized that this halfwit was too close for his own safety, and Maddox yelled at him, "Get back, you idiot!" I said to Maddox, "I won't hurt him." As I started toward the hall, Maddox, who was no idiot, moved away from me and aimed his Colt 45. "Stop." I stopped. A few seconds later, Carl's voice called out, "Clear." Maddox informed me, "Kate is on the floor, and Carl has his shotgun aimed at her head. Just so you know." He pointed to the opening. "Go." I sat on the floor and lowered myself, feet and shackles first, into the hole until I felt the first step. I knew that once Kate and I were down in this subterranean area, no one on the ground was going to find us. Maddox said, "Let's go, John. I'm on a tight schedule." I descended the spiral staircase, which wrapped around the hydraulic piston. It was not that easy to move in shackles, but my hands were free, so I held both rails and mostly slid down. On that subject, if Maddox intended to handcuff us at some point, then I'd have to make a move before that happened. I knew Kate also understood that. It was about 20 feet to the floor below, the height of a two-story building, and I guessed without too much thinking that this was the fallout shelter. At the bottom of the spiral staircase was a round, concrete room, lit with bare fluorescent bulbs. Opposite the last step, about 10 feet away, was a shiny steel bank vault door embedded in the concrete wall. Behind me, Carl said, "Face down." I turned and saw Carl at the other end of the round space, pointing his shotgun at Kate, who was lying face down on the floor. This might have been a good time to make a move, but before I could decide, Carl aimed his shotgun close to Kate's head and shouted, "Three, two." I got down on the cold concrete floor and Carl yelled, "Clear." I heard Maddox scrambling down the spiral staircase as though he'd practiced this a few times. He said, "John, I think one of you has to go." I didn't reply. A few seconds went by, and I heard Luther's boots on the stairs, then the hissing sound of the hydraulic piston, and finally the table and floor dropping into place. Luther was down the spiral stairs, and Maddox said to him, "Open the door." I heard the vault wheel click, then a small squeak as the heavy door swung open. Maddox told me, "John, no matter what move you make or try to make, Kate is the first to get shot." He said to Carl and Luther, "You got that? If Corey makes a move, you shoot Kate. I'll take care of Mr. Corey." Carl and Luther both replied, "Yes, sir." Then Maddox warned, "You're trying my patience, and I'm running almost 10 minutes behind schedule."
So you either behave and do what you're told, quickly, or I shoot one of you so we can get back on schedule. Understand?
I understand.
Good. You're never a hero to your wife anyway, so don't even try.
Good advice.
The next thing I heard was Maddox saying, Kate, stand. Hands on head. She stood, and Maddox instructed, follow Carl. Then to me, John, stand. Hands on head. Follow at 20 feet. I stood, put my hands on my head, and noticed now a big canvas bag on the floor. It was partly unzipped, and I could see the sleeve of my leather jacket peeking out. Apparently, Derek had given Luther all our things, and the last trace of our being at Custer Hill, except for Rudy's van, which they'd get rid of, was now gone. Maddox saw what I was looking at and said to me, they won't even find your DNA in the bear shit. He motioned toward the door. Go. I went through the vault door, which was embedded in about 3 feet of concrete. Maddox, behind me, said, welcome to my fallout shelter. Luther brought up the rear, and I could hear the vault door closing and locking. I had the sense that we were under the back terrace, deep in the bedrock, and not connected to the basement of the house. I also had the sense that there wasn't anyone on the surface who could ever find us.
Chapter 50.
We were now in a wide corridor whose concrete walls were painted a light green that changed into sky blue about a third of the way up the 10-foot height. The ceiling was covered with frosted glass panels, behind which were bright violet lights that I guessed were grow lights, though I didn't see any vegetation, unless you counted the horrid 1980s astroturf on the floor. I suppose someone was trying to create the illusion that you were outdoors in a sunlit meadow that happened to look like an underground concrete corridor. Maddox said unnecessarily, you're supposed to think you're above ground. I asked, aren't we? He didn't answer my question. My idiot ex-wife's idea. He added, she had an irrational fear of atomic war. Silly woman. He seemed in a better mood, and he motioned to an open door to the right, which I could see was a children's playroom. The children were young then, and she thought they'd thrive down here. I commented, the grow lights might help, but their playdates might be somewhat limited. He wasn't paying any attention to me, and he actually seemed to be talking to himself. She saw On the Beach and Dr. Strangelove about 20 times, and I don't think she realized one was a serious film and the other was gallows humor. He added, nuclear Armageddon movies sent her to her therapist for months. I had the impression that Bain Maddox had some issues with his ex-wife's obsession with nuclear holocaust, and maybe what he was trying to do now was work through that by starting a nuclear war of his own. I was sure that Mrs. Maddox would be one of the first people he called after it was over. Anyway, Kate and I moved slowly down the passage in our shackles, and every time I hitched up my pants, Luther yelled, "Hands on your head!" And I replied, fuck you. I could hear the vents blowing, but the air smelled damp and slightly unpleasant. On either side of the passage were open doors that revealed furnished rooms. Bedrooms, a sitting room, a kitchen, and a long dining room with paneled walls, heavy drapes, a coffered ceiling, and plush carpets. Behind one closed door, I distinctly heard talking. Then I realized it was a radio or television. So maybe someone else was down here. Maddox, again talking to himself, said, she spent a fortune decorating this place. She wanted to sit out the half-life of radioactive fallout in the style to which she'd become accustomed. He was on a roll, so I didn't comment. He continued, on the other hand, I find this space useful. First, for my ELF transmitter, and also as a place to store a fortune in art treasures, gold, and cash. He made a joke. The last IRS agent who came snooping around is still locked in a room down here. Good one, Bane. Actually, this place looked like the Führer bunker, but this might not be the right time to make that comparison. We reached the end of the passageway, which must have run for 50 yards, and Carl unlocked a steel door, opened it, and turned on the lights. Maddox said, "Kate, follow Carl. John, stop." Kate disappeared into the doorway, and I stood there. Carl called out, "Clear." Maddox said, "John, follow." I was getting a little tired of these doggy commands, but it wasn't worth mentioning now that we were so close to the end. I entered the room and saw that Kate again was on the floor, and Carl stood against the far wall, covering her and me as I entered. Maddox instructed, "John, down." I lay face down on a plush blue carpet. On a professional level, I appreciated Carl and Bane's military precision and their textbook handling of two prisoners who, though shackled, unarmed, and outnumbered by 3 armed men, they understood to be potentially dangerous. On the downside of that, these guys weren't giving me an inch to wiggle out of this. Using shackles instead of handcuffs was a judgment call, and I could see why Maddox had gone with the shackles up to this point. The only real mistake they'd made so far was not finding the bear bangers, which was why the police strip-searched prisoners and examined the body cavities. Now that we were in the dungeon, that might very well be Maddox's next move, along with handcuffs. And that would be our signal to act. Meanwhile, Maddox and Carl seemed to be busy with something other than us, but I caught a glimpse of Luther near the door with his M16 raised and pointed, and the muzzle sweeping back and forth between me and Kate. I didn't see the canvas bag, which Luther had apparently stowed somewhere along the way. Therefore, the only weapons in this room were the ones we saw pointed at us. On the subject of weapons, Carl's choice of an automatic shotgun in confined quarters was also very professional. Bullets from high-powered rifles have a tendency to pass through people and hit other people you don't necessarily want to hit, then ricochet and become dangerous to the shooter and his friends. In fact, down here, Luther's M16 was almost as dangerous to him as it was to us. Nevertheless, I didn't want him firing it at us. As for Maddox's Colt 45, it was okay in confined quarters with masonry surfaces. It would put a big hole in you at close range, and its exit velocity wasn't usually fatal to anyone on the other side of the intended victim. Also, if it hit a concrete wall, its blunt-nosed bullet was more likely to splatter than ricochet. Having analyzed all that, my conclusion was that Kate and I were basically fucked. In fact, the bear bangers were getting smaller and smaller in my mind. Maddox said, "On your knees. Hands on your heads." I lifted myself into a kneeling position with my hands on my head, and I saw Kate do the same. We were about 10 feet apart in the dimly lit room, and we made eye contact. She dropped her face and eyes down toward where the bear banger was stuck, somewhere in her jeans or panties, and probably behind her zipper. She glanced at me, and I gave a slight shake of my head. "Not the right moment," I wanted to say. "You'll know when." I looked around the room as my eyes adjusted to the dim light. Maddox was sitting with his back to us at some sort of electronic console that was against the far wall. I assumed that was the ELF transmitter. Eureka. Now what? Luther was still standing near the door, covering Kate and me with his rifle. Carl wasn't visible, but I heard him breathing behind us. The room itself was a sparsely furnished and functional-looking office. This was obviously Bane's Atomic War headquarters, where he could spend the day making phone calls to see if anyone was alive out there after the big one. He probably had a ticker tape, too, to see how his defense and oil stocks were doing. I never understood, during the 70s and 80s, why people wanted to survive a nuclear holocaust. I mean, Other than some cans of chili and a case of beer, I never made any long-range post-nuclear war plans. But to be fair to Bain, this was mostly his ex-wife's idea. I wondered what became of her. Wood chipper? Anyway, I noticed, too, that mounted on the paneled wall to the right of the electronic console were three flat-screen television monitors on swing arms. They looked new and out of place in this 1980s time capsule. To the left of the console was a bank of six older television sets, and they were all lit, but it was hard to see the black-and-white images on them, which kept shifting. I realized these were security monitors, and I made out the gatehouse on one screen, then an image of the lodge taken from the gatehouse, which then shifted to an image of the generator building and so forth. Therefore, Maddox would know if the cavalry arrived, and so would Kate and I. But so far, everything out there in Custer Hill Land looked normal, peaceful, and quiet. A recurring unhappy thought was that even if the state police and the FBI busted through the gate and kicked in the doors of the lodge, no one would find us down here. And even if Schaefer remembered that there was supposed to be a fallout shelter somewhere, he'd probably be looking in the basement of the lodge itself, and he might very well mistake some room down there for a fallout shelter. For damn sure he wasn't going to find the hydraulic floor under the card table, and even if by some miracle he did, it would take hours or longer to get an explosive ordnance team down here to blast open that vault door. Wow. We were double fucked. There was only one way out of this mess, and that was the way I should have chosen this afternoon. This bastard and his buddies had to die, here and now, before they killed us, and before Maddox detonated those four nukes in Sandland. Maddox swiveled around and asked me, "Do you understand what's happening?" "John? I think we established that you're going to send an ELF wave to four receivers that are attached to nuclear detonators and four suitcase bombs." "Correct." He added, "I've actually begun the transmission." "Shit." He said, "Come closer. On your knees. Come on." Kate and I moved on our knees closer to the console. Then Carl, behind us, ordered, "Stop." We stopped. Maddox asked, "Can you see these three little windows?" We looked to where he was pointing to a black box on top of the console. The first window in the box was spinning a dizzying array of red LED letters, and Maddox said, "I've sent out the first letter of the three-letter code that will detonate the four devices." He explained, "I could have put a time clock in each of the nuclear suitcases, but then the detonation time would be preset and out of my control. So I chose a command detonation mode, meaning my ELF radio, which is perfect for this task and foolproof." He added, "I finally got my money's worth out of this ELF station." I told him, "You know, Bain, you can explore for oil with ELF waves." He smiled and said, "I see you've done some homework." He informed me, "I don't need to explore for oil. I already know where it is, and the present owners are about to be nuked." "Why are you doing this?" He looked at me and replied, the why question. He lit a cigarette. "Why? Because I'm fucking sick and tired of a succession of ballless presidents kissing Arab ass. That's why." I figured he'd kissed a little Arab ass himself, and this was payback. I figured, too, I'd go along with him and said, "You know, Bain, Kate and I see this shit every day in our job. Illegal Muslim immigrants being treated like they were constitutional lawyers. Suspected terrorists all lawyered up and threatening to sue for false arrest." I went on with my litany of problems on the job, but oddly, Maddox didn't seem that interested. I concluded with, "I understand your frustrations, but exploding four nuclear weapons in Sandland is not going to solve the problem. It'll make it worse." He laughed, which I thought was strange. Then he swiveled around again and punched a few keys on his keyboard. He explained, each letter needs to be encoded with a four-letter code group. Right, I agreed. Can we talk about this? He didn't seem to hear me, and he appeared intent on reading his dials and listening to something on a set of headphones that he held briefly to his ear. I noticed that the first window in the black box had stopped spinning letters, and it was locked into a bright red G. Kate spoke up.
When the state police and FBI get here, they're going to knock out your generators and the antenna poles.
Maddox was still playing with his electronics and replied without turning around, Kate, first, they haven't even left police headquarters yet, which is over an hour from here. Second, they really don't know what's happening here. Third, even if they got here in the next 30 minutes, they'd be too late. He explained, this will all be over in less than 20 minutes. I noticed now that the second window in the black box was spinning red letters. Maddox swiveled in his chair and said to us, the second letter is sent, and the four receivers in the suitcase nukes will pick it up in about 15 minutes. I thought maybe he was joking and jiving us about how much time we had left, so to show him we'd done our homework, I said, about 30 minutes.
No, 15.
That's how long each repetitive ELF wave will take to reach San Francisco and Los Angeles, and have its signal decoded in the receiver. The Mideast, I corrected. 30 minutes.
No, said Mr. Maddox impatiently. You still don't get it, which is good news for me.
Kate asked, get what?
Get Project Green and Wildfire.
Maddox swiveled around again and read his electronic dials, commenting, the generators are maintaining 6,000 kilowatts. He put his hand on the keyboard. Now all I have to do is type the encryption for the last letter in the three-letter code. As he said that, the second letter on the black box froze at O. So now it read G-O. He noticed it and said, we have a G and O.
So, what's the code word?
I can't remember. G-O-B? G-O-T? He laughed over his shoulder at us. G-O-C-O? No, too many letters. Help me. John? Kate? Please, God, let me remember.
That's it. G-O-D.
The man was clearly having fun while losing his marbles. He typed on his keyboard and the last window began spinning letters. He swiveled back to us and said, so what's happening is that my encryption software has successfully sent the letters G and O via ELF wave toward the four receivers, which is confirmed by the G and O on the black box. But as you know, it takes a while for these repetitive waves to actually reach the receivers and for them to properly decode. Understand? I didn't think he really gave a shit if we understood, unless he was trying to see what we knew, so I said, we understand.
Really?
He informed us, I've used a repeating, self-correcting code, which is continuously transmitted until the initiating sequence is received. In other words, D-O-G won't work. Only G-O-D can make an explosion. Follow? I reminded him, don't forget to activate your isotopes.
To... what?
He looked at me like I was crazy, then continued, this is the same software system that the Navy uses for their nuclear submarine fleet.
But maybe you knew that.
Do you know about my little experiment back in the 1980s? Kate replied,
we do.
And so does everyone in the FBI.
Really? Well, that's too bad, but not relevant now. In any case, when that black box spells G-O-D, about 15 minutes later, the four receivers will have the entire three-letter code in proper sequence. G-O-D.
D. Then, after 2 minutes, if there's no change in the continuous transmitted signal, the four receivers will send an electronic pulse to the four detonators, which are attached to the receivers, and we have four nice nuclear explosions, thanks to Dr. Putyov. Neither Kate nor I responded to that. Maddox lit another cigarette and watched the black box as the last window kept spinning letters. Then the window read D and the box read God. Maddox, who thought that meant him, said, "So, all three letters are now being sent across the country in a continuous pattern." I still wasn't understanding why he was saying across the country, but maybe I did understand, and I didn't want to know. Maddox pushed a few buttons on the console, and four green LED numbers, 1500, appeared on a big screen. Then he hit another button, and the numbers began to count down. He told us, "It's hard to say exactly how long the ELF wave will take to get properly decoded by the receivers, but about 15 minutes is a good guess." Then, as I said, the receivers need to hold these letters for precisely 2 minutes to be certain they're reading the continuous self-correcting code correctly. Then, he slapped his hands together. Boom! I saw that coming, but poor Luther almost wet his pants. Maddox thought that was pretty funny, so he did it 3 more times. Boom, boom, boom. But the surprise was gone, and no one jumped. I mean, this guy was out of his fucking mind, and I hoped that Carl and Luther were getting it. I was sure that Harry had gotten it at some point, and maybe Carl and Luther would remember what happened to Harry. I focused on the countdown clock, which now read 1336, then 35, and so forth, on the way to nuclear ecstasy for Bain Maddox. Maddox chain-lit another cigarette, looked at his watch, and then the countdown clock, then checked some of his instruments, then glanced at the 6 security monitors. Maddox seemed to be in a manic state, and I could understand that this was his payoff moment for years of work and planning. I, on the other hand, didn't have much to do except kneel with my hands on my head, watching and listening. I mean, I wasn't exactly bored observing a nuclear event unfolding, but I'm more of an action guy. On that subject, Carl was still behind us. So going for the bear banger, which had dropped a bit south in my tighty-whities, was not an option. I might get the bear banger out, but I'd be dead before I could figure out which way was up and press the button on the other end of it. Kate had a better chance of reaching into the front of her jeans and pulling the thing out before Carl or dim-witted Luther noticed. And I could see she was getting tense just thinking about it. She was watching Luther as much as she could get away with it, but we couldn't watch Carl, and I had no idea how closely he was focused on us. Plus, just when Luther's dim brain seemed to be wandering, Maddox would suddenly swivel around and chat with us. In fact, he now turned toward us. "You probably think I'm crazy." I replied, "No, Bain, we know you're crazy." He started to smile, but then realized his troops were present, and he didn't want to put any ideas into their heads, so he got serious, like he was sane, and said to me, "There's not one major figure in the history of the world who has not been called crazy. Caesar, Attila, Genghis Khan, Napoleon, Hit..." Well, maybe he was a little unbalanced, but you understand what I'm saying. I understand that if you think you're Napoleon, you may need to speak to someone. John, I don't think I'm anyone except who I am. That's a good start, Bain. He informed us, "I don't think you appreciate what I'm doing." He thereupon went into a whole riff about great men who changed the course of history, including some guy named King John of Poland, who saved Vienna from the Turks and didn't get anything out of it. I mean, who gives a shit, Bane? Meanwhile, the countdown clock read 11:13 and counting. Kate took advantage of Maddox's pausing to light a cigarette and asked him, "What is wildfire?" He blew a few smoke rings, then answered, "It's a top-secret government protocol that goes into effect if and when America is attacked with a weapon or weapons of mass destruction. It's the only good and sane thing we've ever done since MAD, mutually assured destruction." Kate followed up with, "What does that have to do with what's happening now?" He looked at her through his smoke and asked, "So you really don't know, do you?" I had the impression that if we answered some of these questions wrong, if he thought we were really clueless, then we'd be joining Putyov and the IRS guy sooner rather than later. So I replied, "We were briefed, but good. Tell me." "Okay. Well, wildfire is a secret government protocol that goes into effect." "John, you're such a bullshitter." He said, "I'll tell you." He launched into an explanation of wildfire, which I found scary but at the same time strangely reassuring. The scariest thing was that Bane Maddox knew the intimate details of a secret that was right up there with the most sensitive national secrets in the country, including where the Roswell aliens were hidden. Meanwhile, the countdown clock read 9:34, and as I watched while Maddox spoke, it went to 9:00, then 8:59. I was catching most of what Maddox was saying, and when he began to recite the cities in the world of Islam that were going to be nuked if wildfire was ever triggered, I thought the guy was going to have an orgasm. I mean, he was in total ecstasy, and I sort of hoped he would swoon or something. When he got to the part of the wildfire plan about nuking the Aswan High Dam, he became animated, threw his arms into the air and said, "Billions of gallons of water. The entire Lake Nasser and the Nile will sweep away Egypt and deposit 60 million bodies in the Mediterranean." Jeez. Bane, tell me you're not nuts. As riveting as this was, I did notice two things. One, Maddox had his Colt 45 stuck in the inside pocket of his blue blazer. And two, Luther was looking a little concerned, as though this were all new to him. In fact, he lit a cigarette, which you're not supposed to do on duty, especially if it means leaving your rifle dangling by its sling over your shoulder while you screw around with your cigarettes and lighter. Meanwhile, the room was getting smoky, and I was going to point out that secondhand smoke was not healthy for any of us, but then Bane would point out that neither Kate nor I should be thinking long range. The countdown clock read 7:28. A phone rang somewhere in the room, and it was actually Maddox's cell phone, which he pulled out of his pocket. He said, "Maddox," then he listened and confirmed, "Project Green is go." Followed by Kaiser Wilhelm, who must be in on this, or more likely that was a code word that meant everything was fine, and he, Maddox, was not under duress. Maddox listened again, then responded, "Good." He glanced at the countdown clock and said into his cell phone, "About 5 or 6 minutes, give or take. Then the 2 minutes for the lock-in." "Yes, that's good. What are they having for dinner?" He listened, laughed, and said, "I may be saving you all from a fate worse than death." "Okay. Good. Thanks, Paul." He added, "God bless us all." He hung up and told me, "You'll appreciate this, John. The president and his guests are having French cuisine, poached truite saumonier with sauce relevé for dinner." So, where was I? I said, "Excuse me, Bane. I must not have been paying attention, but, oh, sorry. That was Paul Dunn, the special assistant to the president on matters of national security." He explained, They're having a small, intimate dinner at the White House tonight. This is good because the President and First Lady can be quickly evacuated from Washington, along with Paul. Is the food that bad? Maddox laughed and said, "You actually are funny." He put the cell phone back in his pocket. FYI, I have a cell antenna down here, and my relay tower is again activated. But unfortunately for my non-paying customers in the vicinity, the system is now voice scrambled. He asked me, "Where was I?" 60 million bodies floating down the Nile. Right. The biggest single loss of life in the history of the world. Plus, don't forget another 100 million or more of our Muslim friends incinerated in 100 more nuclear explosions. I still wasn't quite following this. I understood what wildfire was, which sounded a little extreme as a retaliation for a terrorist nuke going off in America, but who was I to judge? What I didn't understand was how Maddox, by nuking 4 Islamic cities, was going to trigger wildfire. Then I got it. It wasn't 4 Islamic cities. It was 2 American cities. The cities where the nukes were right now. L.A. and San Francisco. Holy shit. I looked at Kate, whom I could see was white as a ghost. Maddox grabbed a remote clicker from his console and turned on the 3 flat-screen televisions. The first one brightened, and I could see a news studio, and a weather lady was pointing at a national weather map. Maddox said, "Washington." Then he hit the mute button as the sound came up. The second screen showed another news studio, and some guy was given a sports roundup. Maddox noted, "San Francisco," then muted that TV as well. The third screen showed 2 news anchors yakking it up with a daytime skyline behind them, and it took me a few seconds to recognize it as downtown Los Angeles. Maddox listened for a few seconds, then looked at his watch. Okay, it's 7:56 here, so on the left coast it's 4:56 p.m. He looked at his countdown clock that read 4:48, 47, 46. 45. He said, "So we have 5 or 6 minutes for the last letter, D, to reach the receivers. Then, 2 minutes for lock-in." He paused. "God." I cleared my throat and said to him, Are you? "Spit it out, John. What the fuck are you doing?" "What's it look like I'm doing?" I didn't reply. And neither did Kate. He sat back in his swivel chair, crossed his legs, and lit yet another cigarette. Project Green. That's the name of my plan to trigger wildfire. Get it? 4 suitcase nukes. 2 in L.A., 2 in San Francisco. He added, "They cost me $10 million, plus maintenance." Maddox glanced back at the countdown clock. "They'll all blow in less than 6 minutes." He turned toward us and said, "Then, the wildfire retaliatory response kicks in, and we blow those Islamic sons of bitches off the face of the earth for what they did to Los Angeles and San Francisco." He stopped abruptly, as though something just dawned on him, then said, "I forgot. I'm blowing up San Francisco and Los Angeles." He laughed. "Holy shit." I said to him, "Bane, for God's sake, you can't. John, shut up. You sound like Harry now. And while you're shutting your mouth, think about how beautiful this is. Project Green. Wildfire. Why green? Because..." He looked at the flat screens. "See that ribbon running across the bottom on the LA channel? What's that say? Alert level orange. Do you know what it's going to say in the very near future? Green. Permanent green. Get it? You'll never again be wanded at an airport. Well, actually, you'll never again be at an airport. But think of all our fellow Americans who are inconvenienced at the airport. He rambled on a bit, and I looked at the news shows from L.A. and San Francisco, hoping I'd see some indication that some dangerous plot had been uncovered in those cities. But the anchors were starting to wrap it up. I hoped, prayed actually, that both pilots and co-pilots in both cities had been found. But the chances of all four of those guys being found by now, along with the suitcase nukes, were not good. I said to Maddox, "Bane, the government will know it was you and not the terrorists who..." "John, even if they did figure it out, it would be too late. Wildfire is hardwired and on a hair trigger. Bane, they'll be here looking for you. You know what? I don't give a shit as long as I know that the world of Islam is lying in nuclear ruin. I don't mind being a martyr for my country. My faith? Are you out of your fucking mind? You're gonna murder millions of Americans. Millions of innocent Muslims. John, shut the fuck up." He glanced quickly at Carl and Luther, then said to me, "The ends justify the means." "No, they do not." He raised his voice. "They do. This is a whole new world we're talking about. Are you too stupid to understand?" "I have to pee." Maddox looked at Kate. "What?" "I have to pee. Please, I can't hold it in. I don't want to wet myself here." Maddox seemed annoyed, thought a moment, then said, "Well, I don't want you wetting yourself here either, considering the lousy job the air purification people did." He instructed Carl, "Watch her." Carl ordered Kate, "Down on all fours. Turn around." Kate did as she was told, then Carl said, "Over there." I lost sight of her, but I heard Carl move across the floor, and then I heard a door opening behind me. Maddox watched what was happening, as did Luther, who again took out his cigarettes. Carl said to Kate, "Go ahead. I'm not closing the door." The moment had arrived. Carl was watching Kate with his back to me, and Maddox was dividing his attention between his countdown clock, which now read 3:26, his security monitors, which still showed no problems, and his flat-screen TVs, where news shows were still wrapping up their hours. Luther was fixated on the open bathroom door. I turned my head and looked behind me. Carl was standing at the door with his shotgun at his hip, pointed at Kate, whom I could see standing in front of the toilet bowl, unbuttoning her jeans, then unzipping her fly. I don't know what Carl thought he was going to see, but he was about to see something else. Maddox said, "John, you don't need to watch your wife peeing. Turn this way." I turned away from what was going to be a very bright light, held my breath, and shut my eyes. I was prepared for it, but when it happened, I almost peed my pants myself. There was a deafening explosion that filled the room as if the noise were solid. Simultaneously, the room was lit with a blinding light, which I could actually see through my closed eyelids, and I heard Carl screaming in pain. I was flat on the floor now, with my bear banger in my hand, but the room was full of smoke, so I couldn't see Maddox or Luther, and I hoped they couldn't see me. I'd already decided that Luther presented the biggest threat with his M16, so I pointed the bear banger at where I could see movement near the door and fired. Another huge explosion filled the room as the flare shot out of the bear banger like a red laser beam and exploded on the wall, or on Luther. It didn't matter if I hit him or not because by now everyone was half blind
deaf, and definitely fucked up. I spun around and lunged across the floor where I saw Carl lying on his back. I reached around for his shotgun, but couldn't find it. Then Kate shouted something, but I couldn't hear her. I looked at her and saw she already had the shotgun. There were small fires on the carpet from the Bear Banger flares, and I also noticed a couch blazing. I caught a glimpse of Carl's face, or what used to be his face. Then I got into a crouch and charged at Maddox, whom I could now see on the floor near his swivel chair, moving around, obviously disoriented, but nowhere near out of action. I took too long a stride for the shackle chain, and I fell forward, then scrambled on my hands and knees toward him. Before I could get to